This is Prop Point on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome into Prop Points, your midday buffet of bets, analysis, and insights. I'm Brandon Kravitz alongside Eric Holterman as we once again fill the shoes of Nick Whalen and Jeff Erickson. On the show today, got another top flight running back getting paid. We'll talk about his season-long props and fantasy impact. John McKechnie, our RotoWire brethren, chops it up about the college football betting guide and some of his favorite plays on the year. Ariel Epstein, the prop queen at the bottom of the hour, and we'll round out the show with Eric's best bets in Major League Baseball. If you want to catch up on any of the topics that we discuss on today's show, make sure you go and download the Prop Points podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Hall of Fame game last night did not disappoint, Eric. It was an ACC classic as Haynes King from Georgia Tech willed his team to victory as time expires. Carson Becht looked fantastic, 15 of 19 for 188 yards and a touchdown. I don't think we have any wild takeaways from this game, but pretty great to see football on the screen. And dare I say, Eric, perhaps the most entertaining Hall of Fame game ever.
Yeah, I don't know who's done a conclusive ranking there. I'm sure that is BuzzFeed still around. I'm sure they're on that sort of thing. But man, it was good just to have football back on the television again. I had to miss the start of this one hosting the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball podcast last night. But when I was able to rejoin, just good to hear the crunch of the pads, the whistle of the whistle. Not sure how to finish that one there, but just good to have football back on TV. Who knows if it matters too much how any of these guys performed, although maybe Carson Beck, right? It was a pretty strong performance from him. Couldn't ask for much more. I don't think he's likely to have a real chance to start the year as the Arizona quarterback, or do you think there maybe is a chance if he keeps having a strong preseason?
Arizona is not supposed to be all that competitive. They're in one of the toughest divisions in football. So for them to have any sort of sights set on the playoffs is probably a bit unrealistic. They've got a new head coach and Mike LaFleur, the brother of Matt, that they're breaking in as well. I think the offense has a chance to be exciting with Jeremiah Love. And if Marvin Harrison Jr. can activate anything close to what his potential is, but because of that, because this is very much a rebuilding year and one that they're aware of, Carson Beck does have a shot. And it's at least a reason to watch the rest of these preseason games. You know, I think there probably are too many people out there. I haven't done a lot of listening today to the national media, but just knowing how people react to things like this, there's probably way too much Carson Beck should be the starter now. Well, let's cool it for just a moment on that. Jacoby Brissett was not all that bad last year. They signed him to a pretty substantial 1-year deal to have him be the starting quarterback going into this year. So I don't think that we can just throw him out. But if Carson Beck continues to shine in the preseason, that's something that we can definitely look for. Haynes King wasn't bad either. The reigning ACC player of the year, 21 of 34, 180 yards, 2 passing touchdowns, and of course he ran one in. I had the Cardinals plus 1.5 last night, sitting pretty. Time expires, Haynes King runs it in, and we are reminded once again of the perils of betting on professional football. The Lions make Jahmyr Gibbs the highest paid running back in NFL history. A 3-year extension is now pretty much all of the top guys in fantasy are getting extensions here as we get close to the season. Jonathan Taylor's been paid. Bijan Robinson has now been paid. What's funny here, Eric, is that when you look at the earnings, Jahmyr Gibbs, $22.5 million per year, out earns Bijan by a hair, $0.25 million, which for guys like us would mean a lot. But for them, it's just, I guess it's more ego than anything else.
Yeah, I'm willing to take an extra $0.25 million if anybody is offering. Really interesting to see just how close those two are in the contracts. They're just that close in the fantasy ADP as well. I was looking at the numbers over at the NFFC. Jahmyr Gibbs, an ADP of 1.60. Bijan Robinson, 1.63. That's just about as close as their salaries are as well. So if you had to bet the offensive player of the year right now, Bijan Robinson at 9-1 compared to Gibbs at 6-1, do you say, you know what, These guys are so close in fantasy ADP. They're so close in the projections. They're so close in salary. Just give me the guy who pays a little bit more. Do you think Jahmyr Gibbs is maybe even the better bet, despite being the 6-1 favorite?
I'm going to take the chalky answer here and just say you really can't go wrong with either guy. Look, they're not both of them are not going to win it, but they can both be good picks at the top of the board in terms of fantasy. So this is sort of it's sort of the same conversation, but in the betting world, we're talking price, of course. So I have no issue if you say, hey, Bijan's 9-1, Gibbs is 6-1. I'm just going to take the guy that offers me a better payout. I've got no problem with that whatsoever, but there's a reason why Gibbs is 6-1 and Bijan is 9-1. I also think it's the reason why for me, I would take Jahmyr Gibbs if I had the number one pick in fantasy. These guys are very similar in their production, Eric, both with 100 catch potential. We love that in fantasy, separated by just 4 fantasy points. If you just look at last season, Bijan just barely edging him out, but that of course could flip. Gibbs scored 18 touchdowns, Bijan scored 11, and both lost the touchdown vulture in the offseason. Tyler Algier is gone from Atlanta. David Montgomery is gone from Detroit. Both have been replaced, but I don't think that the talent level matches, so they could both see an uptick in touchdowns. And that's what's crazy, is we're talking about Bijan Robinson and Jahmyr Gibbs with potentially more upside than what they've already offered. But to me, it comes down to the offense, and that's why I have Gibbs a tick higher, just because he plays for the Lions. The best seasons in fantasy history have come from the offenses that are the most prolific in their nature, and the Lions just have a much better chance of being prolific than the Atlanta Falcons do. So I think I'm splitting hairs there. If you had the number one pick, who are you taking off the board?
I think I agree with your argument. I think I would lean Gibbs slightly, but I think if you're in one of those leagues where you could choose which pick you get, I think this is a year where choosing the second pick and getting a slightly better pick in round two, if it's close to a toss-up between those number one and number two players, I think the real answer is just try to pick second.
That's probably the sharpest way to look at it. And same thing goes for the bet itself. So 9-1 for Bijan Robinson, probably the smarter bet to make. If you want to bet smarter, then use RotoWire. Our brand new smart money tool shows you exactly where the sharp action is moving so that you're always on the right side. And that's just the start. RotoWire's award-winning staff delivers rankings, projections, real-time injury updates, and data-driven insights across every sport every day. Whether you're handicapping games, crushing your fantasy league, or both, RotoWire has you covered. Head to rotowire.com now. Use the promo code VSIN at checkout for 15% off of any RotoWire product. That's rotowire.com, promo code VSIN. Let's take a look at the Thursday fallout Major League Baseball. Again, back half of the show, we've got a lot of plays to give out between Ariel Epstein and this man, Eric Halterman. The ball was popping off the bats yesterday. 5 teams scoring into double figures on Thursday. And if you are primarily an unders better like me, you are feeling it today. But I digress. Between that and the Arizona Cardinals not covering the 1.5, I'm pulling my remaining hairs out of my head. But this isn't about me. This is about the baseball slate. Pete Crow Armstrong scored on a throwing error in the 11th after an Alex Bregman 2-strikeout home run in the 9th inning. The Cubs beat the Blue Jays 3-2. Dylan Cease records his 8th 10-plus strikeout game this season. Hard to buy the Cubs with all the hurdles that they have in the National League, but are you a believer in the Chicago Cubs this year?
I am a believer to a certain extent. I think this is a good team. I don't think this is an NL pennant favorite in a world where the Dodgers exist, but you could make a case that they're right up there with the Brewers and Braves as the second best team. It's going to depend on how much they get out of their starting pitching and also whether or not they can get that bullpen healthy. The fact that they've had a strong season despite having tons of injuries in both of those areas is pretty impressive. I think it's a pretty good offense. It's a deep offense. It's also an offense that has Pete Crow Armstrong playing at MVP form for the last couple months. If he's able to sustain that the whole way this time rather than falling off late in the year like he did last year, and then if they have that real star power. They added some pitching, too. Kevin Gausman is a nice addition. They've added David Peterson. They've added a couple more pitchers. This is a team that is patching up its holes. They added some bullpen help as well at the deadline. I think it's a pretty good team that got even better. Again, anybody who's stuck with the Dodgers in their league, it's going to be tough to say they're likely to make the World Series, but I think the Cubs are right up there in that second tier of the NL teams. I think it's a pretty good, well-rounded roster, and that's sometimes good enough to make the World Series.
And they're clutch too. It was the 11th walk-off this season for Chicago, so that's something to keep an eye on moving forward, especially if you're in the live betting world. The Phillies beat the Nationals 7-3. We'll wrap on this. Luis Arias has collected an RBI in his first three games with the Phillies, so that's paying off quickly. We've got Christopher Sanchez, the first pitcher to 15 wins this season. 9-1 to win Cy Young. Mizorowski's at minus 500, so that's probably not going to happen. I've been wanting to bet the Phillies or futures on the Phillies all year, and I just cannot pull the trigger on it. Can you talk me into it?
I wish I could. As a Phillies fan, I'm not sure I can really talk you into it. I don't know if I'd include them in that second tier. They could make a run in the playoffs, though, because the top of the rotation is so good. Christopher Sanchez, Zach Wheeler, Jesus Luzardo, you never feel like you're really the underdog. Whenever any of those guys take the mound, it's just this lineup is not very deep. Even adding Luis Arias, the bottom half of the lineup is one of the worst bottom halves among all of the playoff teams. So going to be some low scoring playoff games if they're going to make a run. They're going to have to win a lot of 2-1s.
Just crazy with all the star power they have. Up next, John McKechnie joins the show to share his favorite college football futures and a thought on a Heisman ticket as well. You're listening to Prop Points on VSiN.
So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools, but what they don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you'll get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back here on Prop Points, Brandon Kravitz along with Eric Halterman from rotowire.com headed to the progressive guest line for the first of two top tier guests on today's show. Pleased to welcome in my good friend, John McKechnie from rotowire.com. You can check out all of his weekly college football analysis on the website, as well as season long analysis via VSiN's 2026 college football betting guide. John, let's start with the often forgotten about ACC. It's weird to think that with how good Miami was last year, making it to the national championship game, that they didn't win the conference. In fact, they have never won an ACC conference title. Will they do that this year? Odds set at minus 136.
Yeah, I agree with the odds makers there. They are the prohibitive favorite for a reason. I think that you look at the broader landscape of the ACC and all these teams that are a little bit on the downswing relative to what we've come to expect, whether you're talking about Florida State, whether you're talking about Clemson. So who's next up? You're talking about teams like SMU, who did actually beat Miami last year as well. Louisville, who's also in the mix. They beat Miami last year too, but I don't see it happening again this year. I think Miami does duck both of them on the regular season schedule this year. The schedule sets up really favorably for this Miami team. Really, the only tough test they have is going up to South Bend to face Notre Dame in November. They are a 7-point underdog on that one. If you look at some of the game of the year odds that are up at a lot of sports books already, but in conference, it should be something close to a cakewalk. Now, that's always dangerous. And, you know, I don't like betting it something minus 135 on a future. A lot of things can happen. But I think all told, you look at the landscape of the ACC and look at where Miami fits in. It's really hard to convince yourself anyone else is knocking them off.
John, I'm in Big Ten country here in Illinois, although I guess Big Ten country these days is the whole country, probably another few years until it's the whole world. But do you have a traditional Big Ten team winning the Big Ten this year? Or is it going to be one of the recent additions?
It's going to be really competitive at the top there. I mean, the Big Ten is, you know, they're pounding their chest. They've won the last three national titles and everything like that. So they've got a lot to be bragging about. I think it's Oregon's turn this year once again to win their, I guess it would be their second Big Ten championship in the last 3 years. I think Joel Klatt was putting it really succinct the other day, where he's just like, you look at the top contenders and you look at, you know, ways you can poke holes in these teams. It's really hard to do that when it comes to Oregon. Like, they have so much returning talent. You have Dante Moore, who's one of the Heisman favorites at quarterback in his second year as the starter there in Eugene, a ton of receiving talent around him. DeCorian Moore, they're going to get Evan Stewart back. Jamari Johnson, I think, we're going to see not that much of a drop off from Kenyon Sadiq to Jamari Johnson, different type of player, but really explosive. Maybe the best backfield in college football as well. And you know also that a Dan Lanning coach team is going to be flying around the football on defense. So Oregon is going to be nasty this year. I really am pretty bullish on them and their ability to not just win the Big Ten, but, you know, be a team that makes a lot of noise come CFP time. I know that's sort of like that last thing that Dan Lanning needs to cross off his list, is getting that big signature win in the CFP. It's gone poorly for him the last 2 years, running up against the eventual national champions. But I do think that Oregon's a team that can push to at least make the semifinals in the CFP this year, in addition to getting some Big Ten hardware.
I'm having a really hard time getting past the image of Dante Moore getting blasted out of the sky by Indiana. I'm going to need to forget about that when we get into just wipe the slate clean, Men in Black style going into the season. Let's talk about the Big 12. Brendan Sorsby was a high-priced ad for the Red Raiders. He'll be sidelined for the year after his gambling mishaps. But how much of a hit does Texas Tech take here? Because they've spent a lot on their roster. They still have Will Hammond at quarterback. Are they still live to win the conference?
They are. And I think it was really telling that even amid all of that Brendan Sorsby saga, the oddsmakers didn't really blink. They didn't really budge. The Texas Tech is still the prohibitive favorite to win the Big 12. And I agree with their assessment there as well. I think Hammond can just be a caretaker. I mean, you look at Baron Morton last year, he was the ultimate caretaker for most of the season. And he got them a bye in the college football playoff and also helped them win the Big 12. The defense will be a little bit worse this year. No David Bailey, no Romello Hyde, Jacob Rodriguez, the list goes on, but they did restock through the portal there. And the offense, I think, is going to be a lot more explosive this year. And they're also going to have a three-headed monster in the backfield. And then crucially, you look at that schedule, Texas Tech doesn't play anybody. Like, they don't have to play BYU. I don't think they have to play Arizona State. I don't think they have to play Utah. So like, they really kind of, like, as if they needed any sort of luck from the schedule gods, they got it on top of that. So they're going to be the only way you can really talk yourself into being worried about Texas Tech in the future is just like, they're not going to be really battle tested come playoff time, but we'll see if that matters, because being fresh has kind of worked against teams in the expanded playoff era, but that's champagne problems that I think Texas Tech would be happy to grapple with.
Let's go over to the SEC. Who do you got there? Are you going to take your Georgia to win yet another, or is it time for somebody else to win the SEC?
I think it is time that Georgia will cede its crown for the SEC. I think it is Texas's year, at least as far as the conference is concerned. I can't quite get there as far as them winning it all. But last year, I was just trying to warn everyone, pushing back against all the hype that Texas had, because I found that it was pretty unwarranted. I mean, Arch had played like two games the year prior, beat up on like Miss State and UTSA or something like that. It's going to be a little bit different going up to Columbus to start the year. Last year, obviously, things were tough for Texas in the early part of the year. I do think that year of experience is really going to be beneficial for Arch. I think that he was playing some of the best football of any quarterback in college football down the stretch in November. Their game against Texas A&M kind of like really kind of hammered that home for me. So you run that back, you get a much better backfield this year with Hollywood Smothers coming in and Relique Brown. You add Cam Coleman, who's such a huge difference maker, as if they needed another one of those guys out wide. So that offense is going to be extremely explosive. Whereas with Georgia, you lose Zach Branch, and he was such a huge part of that passing game last year. And I think that he kind of, like, because he was such a big part of it and how he was used, it kind of informs you a little bit on what the offensive coordinator thinks of Gunnar Stockton and his ability to do anything other than throw screens to Zach Branch. So there's a lot of unknown when it comes to Stockton and his ability to kind of operate across the entirety of the field. Georgia has a lot of weapons, especially at tight end. Elias Williams, I think, is a guy that could be a huge breakout this year. But I do think that this offense is a little bit limited for Georgia. The defense is going to be almost as good as it was during its national title days. It was really young last year and got really good towards the end of the season. So there is something to be said for that. But I think Texas has just too much explosiveness on offense, plus Will Muschamp running that defense. I think Texas is going to take the SEC this year.
Folks, the wait is over. The VSiN College Football Betting Guide is here. Sign up for VSiN Pro today. Get instant access to our college football betting guide featuring previews of all 138 FBS teams, our preseason top 50, power ratings, proven betting systems, and best bets from VSiN's sharpest minds like this one, John McKechnie. Plus, you'll get our NFL betting guide, the Fantasy Life Fantasy Football Guide, daily best bets, real-time betting splits, AI-powered prop projections, and 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. Start today for just $9.99, or get a full year and save 50% with a VSiN Pro annual subscription. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe now. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Got about a minute left, John. I took a shot on Darian Mensah, quarterback transfer from Duke, now with the Canes, 12-1 to win the Heisman. You and I are in on this idea that Miami can finally break through and win the ACC. They have their sights set on a national championship. He fits a lot of criteria for me. Good old lines, got Malachi Toney to throw the ball to. Are you in or out on that bet? And who else do you like to win the Heisman this year?
I am in on Mensah to do it. I love that price, 11-1. I think not only do they have Malachi Toney, but you also bring in his top receiver from Duke last year and Cooper Barkate as well. Like we said, we're expecting Duke to stack a lot of wins this year. So I think Mensah is a really sharp bet. I think Dante Moore I would consider as well at the same price. I think that Oregon is going to roll. If Moore has his Heisman moment against Ohio State, I think that, you know, we're looking pretty good there. Anything pricier than that, like CJ Carr or Arch Manning, I think I'd wait a little bit into the season. And as much as I'd love to bet on something like a long shot, like a Jeremiah Smith, it's fun to think of a receiver winning it again. I think it's just 16-1 is not a price I want for a receiver to win the Heisman.
Go and check out all of John McKechnie's best bets in VSiN's 2026 College Football Betting Guide. Thanks so much, John. Appreciate the time. We'll chat again soon, my friend. Up next, headed back to the Progressive guest line, Ariel Epstein joining us right here on Prop Points.
Watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back at it here on Prop Points, Brandon Kravitz along with Eric Halterman from rotowire.com. We are headed back to the Progressive guest line for guest number two, the prop queen herself, Ariel Epstein. You can check out her website, thepropqueen.com, sign up for her newsletter, and of course, make sure to subscribe to Ariel's YouTube channel as well at Prop Queen Media. You can also sign up for Ariel's Hit Streak Survivor contest on Splash Sports. She has roped me into the season-long NFL Survivor contest, but you can find more on her X account. Just go and find her by name, Ariel Epstein. Ariel, we are all sorts of jacked up because football is back on our screens. Maybe this helps clear the path for us in the baseball betting market. I'm curious in general, though, do pitching props become tougher to read and project post trade deadline? Because I tend to live in the totals world, and I am struggling here out of the deadline?
It's great to see both of you. What a great surprise. I am very cautious about the trade deadline players, specifically players that, if you're speaking pitchers, got traded and are making their first appearance for those teams. We're seeing that today with Jose Soriano and the Toronto Blue Jays. I might be betting that, hint, hint, but I would tell people, ear on the side of caution, you just don't know how a new manager is going to want to handle a new piece.
Yeah, let's talk about Jose Soriano, who you just mentioned. We have seen a few starting pitchers who were recently traded struggle in their first outing with their new team. But Jose Soriano has a relatively low strikeout line against the Phillies, just 4.5. Are you feeling pretty good about him hitting the over despite his recent trade?
If I had to take a side, yeah, I'm going over 4.5 Ks. This is on my long list. It's something I would consider betting tonight. Jose Soriano has gone over 4.5 Ks in 4 of 7 matchups he's had this year when facing teams with high K rates. The only reason that I'm even considering this is because Jose Soriano has a great matchup in the Phillies. 6 of the last 10 righties to face the Phillies have gone over 4.5 Ks. Overall this year, they're 41 overs, 32 unders righties when facing Philadelphia. And those starters are averaging just over 5 strikeouts a game. So if Jose Soriano's at 4.5, yet all the righties average together to average 5.3 strikeouts a game when starting against Philadelphia, it's a great matchup for Jose Soriano tonight in Toronto.
It seems like it's trade deadline debut day in Major League Baseball. Tyler Mahle, 9 Ks in his last outing, but that was with a different team. I've been looking at this one closely throughout the course of the day. Maybe this is more of a fade of your Yankees than anything else, but what are you looking at with Tyler Mahle?
What, you think that I'm mad at the Yankees again? Yeah, I am. But anyway, maybe they'll get healthy. Whatever. The Yankees, whether they have Aaron Judge, Cody Bellinger or not, they strike out a lot. It's been happening all year. The Yankees are averaging just under 6 strikeouts a game against righty starters this year. With those righties, 39 overs, 27 unders facing the New York Yankees. At 5.7 Ks per start for righties, that is one of the highest numbers in Major League Baseball for a lineup against any righty starter. Tyler Mahle is a righty starter. Now, it's interesting. So I like to compare how these pitchers do against other teams that strike out above average. Tyler Mahle, 4 of 8, went over 5.5 Ks. However, when on the road against teams with high K rates, Tyler Mahle's actually gone over in 3 of those 4 starts. He's averaging just over 5 strikeouts a game when on the road, which is pretty high. So even though it's his first start with the Braves since getting traded by San Francisco against the Yankees team that strikes out a lot, I'm willing to take an over at 5.5 Ks.
One more strikeout over to look at. This is a battle between a stoppable force and a movable object. We've got Tyler Phillips taking on the Angels. Not exactly a big fan of overs for Tyler Phillips strikeouts normally, but I am a big fan of just about anybody to go over against the Angels. So do you think Tyler Phillips can do it?
So I love this value, plus 125 to go over 3.5 Ks against one of the most strikeout prone lineups in Major League Baseball. Not just this year, for the last at least 3 years, the Angels have been one of the most strikeout prone lineups. Phillips has actually only faced 2 teams with high K rates this year. He had 4 strikeouts against Philly and 5 strikeouts against Philly, which is kind of telling. It's hard to do it twice against a veteran good lineup like the Phillies. And they strike out a lot too, Philadelphia, for what it's worth. So Phillips having this very low sample size of high K rates that he's even faced could be a massive reason why we haven't seen Phillips rack up the Ks. 3.5 over plus 125 in the best possible matchup you could probably have for a right-hander against a lineup to strike him out. Let's take some plus money, plus 125.
More from the prop queen, Ariel Epstein, in a moment, but I think you would all agree fantasy football should be about more than just setting a lineup and checking a score. Fantasy Boss is the new season-long fantasy sports platform built to keep the whole league involved. Commissioners get deep tools to run redraft, keeper, dynasty, best ball, guillotine, and more across every sport. Players get modern experiences that make every matchup feel bigger, weekly recap videos that turn the week into a story that everybody can relive and argue about. Taunt videos give the trash talk a face, and Beat the Boss keeps the whole league competing all season long. Everything lives in one place from draft night through the championship. No patchwork of extra apps, no ads, just a modern season-long fantasy platform with engagement that is built in. Create a new league or bring over the one that's you're already running. Start your league for free at fantasyboss.com/rotowire. That's Fantasy Boss. Your league never felt so alive. Talking to Ariel Epstein, the prop queen here on Prop Points. Logan Gilbert in a pitching duel with Drew Rasmussen tonight in Seattle. So how do we bet into this? This should be a nice low-scoring game in a ballpark that tends to suppress action.
Yeah, and normally the Tampa Bay Rays suppress strikeouts. However, I'm a little worried about this one. It's on the long list. I always like to, in my newsletter, I break things up into the sharp, caution, and danger zone. Sharp, it means I like everything about this, 100% go in. Caution zones are, I really like this, but there's one thing stopping me, and that one thing that stops me might not stop you. So the thing stopping me is Logan Gilbert already faced Tampa Bay and had 5 strikeouts, so he went under 5.5 Ks. This is now juiced to the over the second time around, minus 140 over 5.5 Ks for Gilbert. I don't like betting the same result twice. I say it over and over because these teams are filled with players that can now read a pitcher a second time around and maybe they'll hit him hard or they'll strike out a lot because Gilbert figured it out, vice versa, since it was under 5.5 the last start. So again, I like to stay away. But if you are facing the Tampa Bay Rays, you have to take under or nothing if you're a right-hander. Righty starters against Tampa are averaging just over 4 strikeouts a game, which is very much on the low end. The only other caution I'd say is that 4 of the last 10 went under 5.5, so not as many recently. But a second time around, guys, as much as I want to take the under here, I think it's in plus money for a reason. Logan Gilbert should probably have a great day second time around against those Rays.
One final strikeout prop to take a look at. Jack Perkins, over 4.5 strikeouts versus the Red Sox. I'm considering this one as well for our final segment. Would you talk me into or talk me out of taking Jack Perkins today?
Again, this is one of those rematches. So he just faced the Red Sox on July 27th, and Perkins had 4 strikeouts. Yet today, we're juiced to the over 4.5 Ks at minus 115. That's because the Red Sox are averaging just over 5 strikeouts a game when facing righty starters. Now, Jack Perkins this year went over 4.5 Ks in 5 of the 7 starts where he's faced a high K rate lineup that he's thrown for 4 or more innings in, because the beginning of the year, he didn't throw as much. My only caution, that only 4 of the last 10 went over against Boston. But again, because the first time around, just a week ago, Jack Perkins went under 4.5. We're still booking the number at 4.5, and the books have juiced the over. So let's go for a rematch over instead of the under like last time.
Those are the strikeout props, and you can sign up for Ariel's newsletter if you want more of those on a daily basis, thepropqueen.com. Go and check that out. Before we cut you loose, listen a minute here. The Dodgers are on a slide right now, and I think it's making a lot of people out there in the betting market a little bit paranoid. They went from plus 145 to win the series to plus 160. I mean, marginal, but are you worried at all about the Dodgers, or are they just loafing it till the playoffs start?
I'm not worried at all. Anytime these teams get hot, there always seems to be these like August slumps. Then they'll get hot again at the right time in September. The only concern I'd have about the Dodgers, which everyone's already giving them the World Series, their starting rotation is very injury prone. So when you're looking at certain pitchers in that Dodgers rotation, you're like worried, is Tyler Glass now going to even make it to the playoffs, or is he going to have another oblique injury? I know Tarek Skubal's great, but he's kind of had a down year this year. It's not Cy Young caliber like it has been the last couple of years for Tarek Skubal. Is there value in the National League, guys? Yeah, I think there is. I have a whole YouTube video about it on Prop Queen Media, but I'll tell you that team, Cubs, yeah, I like them.
I can be talked into that. Always a pleasure crossing paths with you. Eric's best bets right here on Prop Points after this.
cashing prop points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back to Prop Points, wrapping things up on a Friday afternoon. Brandon Kravitz here along with Eric Halterman. A special thanks to Ariel Epstein and John McKechnie for joining us throughout the course of the hour. If you want to catch up on any of the segments that you may have missed on today's show, or you just want to go back and listen twice, make sure that you download the Prop Points podcast on Apple, Spotify, and wherever you listen to your podcast. Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson, they'll be back on Monday. But right now, Eric, we have 15 games that we can sort through here. Eric has scanned all of them for your betting pleasures. So let's start with the Mets and the Pirates. New York travels to PNC Park tonight. Narrow road dogs against a Pirates club that badly needs to steady itself. They've lost three straight, eight of the last 10. Who you got, what you got for us in this one tonight?
Yeah, I'm looking at the over in this one. The line set at just 8 runs, which makes some sense. Neither offense has been great recently. The Pirates, sixth from the bottom in team WRC Plus in the last 30 days. The Mets are middle of the pack, and it's not a high-scoring park either. But I don't trust either of these pitchers. It's two pitchers, Zach Thornton and Carmen Majinski, who have pretty good ERAs, but pretty mediocre at best ERA estimators. For Thornton, it's a 2.88 with a 4.55 Sierra. For Majinski, a 3.15 ERA, but a 4.28 Sierra. And that's even with spending some time in relief. Both of these guys just don't miss enough bats. They don't walk too many guys, but with an 18% strikeout rate for Thornton, 19% for Majinski, that's just not enough. Also, Thornton struggled his last time out against the Marlins, only went 4 2/3 innings, so he's not coming off his best outing. I think his early success was a bit of a fluke at the big league level this year. And meanwhile, Majinski, he's actually been pitching in long relief the last couple months. He's been topping out at 3 innings. So I think he's probably only going to throw about 4, maybe 4 1/3. We're going to get into that soft underbelly of the Pirates bullpen, maybe in the 5th, 6th inning. So I think we're going to see some runs in this one, despite the fact that I'm not super high on either the Mets or the Pirates lineup.
I want to stick on this for just a moment. And I bet baseball totals a lot throughout the course of the season. And I mean, it gets to the point with anybody out there that bets a lot of anything, you can kind of just eyeball teams, a ballpark, and guesstimate, and pitchers especially, and guesstimate where the line would be. This feels like it has 8.5 juice to the over written all over it. And yet the line has been parked at 8 juice to the over all day. What do you think is suppressing the total in this game? Is it the Mets offense? Because, you know, what you said about the pitchers holds true, but why do you think we haven't gotten to that 8.5 yet in this game? I'm a little bit spooked by it.
Yeah, it's a great question. I was expecting to see 8.5 for this one too. I think it is just that the lineups have not been very good. Again, the Pirates in particular have really struggled over the course of the last month. They have one of the weakest offenses in the league, but I don't think that that is what we should expect from them going forward. I think they made enough moves over the course of this season to get up to a decent lineup. So I imagine the line's where it is because of the offenses, because of the park as well in Pittsburgh, not a great hitter's park. And I just disagree with it. Sounds like you disagree too. So hopefully we're both right on this one.
My very raw projection on this is 8.9, which is why usually I'm not off by that much. So that's why I wanted to follow up on that one. But I think I'm going to tell you that might be the bet of the night for me. Reds Nationals, Cincinnati Reds took out the Brooms with their 6-5 win over the Athletics on Wednesday night. It was their first series sweep since April. I had to adjust my eyes when I saw that. They rallied for 4 straight, 6 of the last 7. Are the Nationals in trouble here, or does Cavalli give them a lift?
They could be, but I'm on team Cade Cavalli in this one, and I like him to go 7 or more strikeouts. You can get some nice plus money on that one. The Reds over the last 30 days, they actually have the most home runs, but they also have the highest strikeout rate in the league, 27%. Now, Cavalli himself, he actually struck out just 3 batters in each of his last 2 starts, but those were against some lineups that are much tougher to strike out. The Braves, in particular, the Jays, they're the toughest team to strike out in the league. So I don't fault him that much for being limited to 3. And he has struck out plenty of batters, broadly speaking, over the last couple months or so. He has a 25% strikeout rate on the season. That actually jumps up to 29% over his last eight starts, even including those last two where he only struck out three. That 29% strikeout rate over his last eight comes with a 5% walk rate and a 2.58 ERA. So Cavalli's in great form, and even though the Reds could hit a couple over the fence here, I think they're going to swing and miss quite a lot as well.
So the Braves are in New York to take on the Yankees. So we've got another trade deadline debut, Tyler Mahle against Max Fried. The Braves looking to keep their good fortune rolling here. They're riding an 8-game winning streak. The Yankees just a half game up on the surging Red Sox in the wild card. So things are getting a little bit dicey for New York, but we've got our first dinger prop. So talk to me about Ben Rice.
Yeah, I found that if I say positive things about the Yankees, our producer Michael Cohen tends to be happy and I might get invited back. So let's go with a Yankees home run prop in this one. Ben Rice to homer against Tyler Mahle. As usual with home run props, it's more about the pitcher than the hitters. So really any Yankees lefty against Tyler Mahle, I'd be pretty interested in, although Ben Rice has some of the best power in the league. He doesn't have a homer in his last 10 games. He's actually not hitting very well either, just 121, but he's still seeing the ball well, walking plenty over those last 10 games. I'm not particularly worried about that recent slump, and I would be pretty worried about Tyler Mahle's ability to keep the ball in the park. I am very confused why the Braves went out and got him. He was very much a product of his park in San Francisco, had a 265 ERA at home, but an 804 ERA on the road. San Francisco is a park that is really tough to hit the ball out of. He had a 0.9 homer per nine at home. That jumps to 1.9 on the road. Yankee Stadium, famously a great place for left-handed power. So I like a lot of those Yankees lefties to have a chance to homer today, but particularly Ben Rice.
I like that strategy. I also like the strategy of sucking up to the producer. That's always a good one. Solid move by you. Was Ariel Epstein effectively able to walk you into a Jack Perkins bet? He takes on Peyton Tolley of the Boston Red Sox tonight. Have you found value on the A's side of things?
Yeah, I'm interested in even maybe pushing that up to six or more strikeouts for Jack Perkins. You could get some real plus money there. Plus 162 is the line I was seeing. Perkins is very hit or miss. So if you look at his strikeout totals, his last five starts, 8 and then 2, 4, 4, but then 9. When he's on, he is very on and can miss a lot of bats. That is something he's consistently done throughout this season. It's a 27% strikeout rate for Jack Perkins, a 6.72 ERA though, but the ERA estimator is far better than that. Sierra down at 3.56. You also might think that Perkins's strikeout rate is inflated due to his time as a reliever. That was the role he was filling earlier in the year, but he actually had a lower strikeout rate out of the pen, 25%. It's jumped up to 28% as a starter. He's not a perfect pitcher. He's given up far too many runs this year, and that's not all due to his home park, which he won't have to deal with today. But even with his flaws, he can miss plenty of bats, so I think he can have a pretty reasonable chance at getting six or more strikeouts today against the Red Sox.
We'll see if we can slide one more in there for our Friday card. The Angels are in Miami to take on the Marlins. Miami just dropped 3 to the Braves. They managed to score no more than 3 runs in any game. They are struggling right now. The Angels will be tossing George Klaassen. Does he stand in the way of any sort of lift that the Miami Marlins might get in taking on some easier competition?
Klaassen's theoretically an interesting young pitcher, but I think he's a couple years away from really being a interesting pitcher. He really struggled in his two starts back in April, went 2 innings and 2 2/3. So I think he'll go under 14 and a half outs in this one, as in not even finish the fifth inning. He did go 6 or more in his last 3 minor league starts. In the last 2, he didn't walk anybody, but he has got a 12% walk rate in the minors overall this year. I just don't think he has the command to go 5 innings yet.
All right, let's get to it. Our best bets on the night before we hand the show back to Jeff and Nick. What do you got? What stands atop the list?
I'll sneak in the one that we didn't get to in this segment. That's a Guardians -1.5 at the White Sox. I love Parker Messick. Noah Schultz, meanwhile, has not been convincing as a rookie, particularly since returning from the IL. So I like the Guardians -1.5 at the White Sox.
And I am back into football mode after the Hall of Fame game classic last night. Give me Jahmyr Gibbs over 12.5 rushing touchdowns on the season at even money. He should absolutely smash this with David Montgomery gone. Special thanks to Nick and Jeff for being elsewhere and letting us do this. Shout out to the producer, Michael Cohen. Stormy and JVT have you covered next. Thanks for listening. Money Moves is on the way next.